We want to thank y'all for tuning in to Run Up the Numbers.
Every Monday at 8 a.m. And if you miss us in the morning, you can catch the replay in the afternoon at 2 p.m. and again at 8. You can also check out the shows archived over at thenumbers.fm. And for you early risers, every Monday morning at 6 a.m. on 107.1 X-Ray FM.
Make sure you're following us on all social media because we out here. Hey. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, House Party, YouTube, Twitch, Black Planet, because Solange got it lit again. Did somebody say OnlyFans, MySpace, Tinder, catch us ticking on the talk, and Google Plus.
In this episode, we'll be putting you up on the CEO of One United Bank announces campaign to end the racial wealth gap.
Okay.
And six Dr. Seuss books will no longer be published over racist images.
Will daylight savings time change in Oregon? And Maya Shaka makes NFL history.
But first, let's jump into five things the new George Floyd Justice and Policing Act bill would do. House Democrats passed a major effort to overhaul national policing standards, spurred by the deaths of an unarmed African-American at the hands of law enforcement, and which focuses on policy accountability. The George Floyd Justice and Policing Act was approved by the House 220-212 on Wednesday, March 3rd. Here are the five things the bill would do. 1. A chokehold ban. Places a federal ban on police chokeholds and cardioid holds, and support funding for state and local law enforcement agencies that do the same. The new legislation would do away with that action and encourage other methods of subduing a suspect. Number 2, ends no-knock warrants. Creates a federal ban on no-knock warrants in drug cases. The bill also supports funding for state and local police agencies that ban such warrants. Number 3, deadly force as a last resort. Was that not already?
I mean, it...
The bill stipulates that police use deadly force as a last resort and mandates that police officers use de-escalation techniques before deciding on using methods that could take a life. Rather than determining if use is reasonable, they would have to decide if it's necessary. Number 4, police accountability. What?
It's a lie.
Offending officers would be more subject to criminal prosecution by amending the federal statute to prosecute misconduct. The mens rea, or criminal intent standard, in 18 U.S.C. section 242 would change from willfulness to recklessness. Also, law enforcement would be required to collect data on all investigations. So law enforcement has to collect the data on the Okay.
Big. Right. That's a big.
Number 5, eliminates qualified immunity.
Now we talking about something.
Right. Now, suppose officers are found to have violated an individual's constitutional rights. In that case, that person can recover damages in civil court because of the qualified immunity or protection for government officials performing certain duties from civil lawsuits. Without that protection, an individual would be able to file a legal claim against an officer directly.
Listen, that last one, that's what I'm talking about. Deadly force is a last resort. I agree with you. How is that a thing we have to talk about? The ending to no-knock warrants, super official. That, like, let me just cut all of that out. Like, really. I saw a piece over the weekend. It was an old episode of Last Week Tonight with John Oliver. And he was talking about no-knock warrants. And there was a former officer saying that this... All of it needs to end. Like, it was like an old former police chief. And he was like, all no-knock warrants need to end, whether it's drug cases, no matter the case, it needs to end. For the simple fact that why would you purposely put police officers in a situation where they could be running into danger when it's not necessary? Just there's no reason for it. Y'all want to play G.I. Joe and stuff? Like, chill out.
And how, and I feel like with that type of energy from the rip, right, that you're running into a place knowing that you're surprising people. So not only are the officers charged up, but then the people inside having no idea. Your first thought in getting your door bust down is to protect yourself, not to try to decide if this is a threat or not, because it's a threat.
It's a threat.
It came through the front door, which was closed.
It's an established threat.
Probably locked, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Period. You can't bust down a door in a non-threatening way.
Yeah, no, there's really not a way to do that.
No.
Even the Kool-Aid man came through that door with force, or those brick walls. Yes. There's no nice way to do it.
Yeah.
No matter how the smile on the face reaches and extends from
ear
whatever
to ear.
Part of the face that is.
From handle to spout. It don't matter.
Man.
Oh, my gosh. Back on the home front, will daylight savings time change here in Oregon? Daylight saving time starts again at 2 a.m. March 14th, Sunday. That means at 2 a.m. on March 14th, the clocks magically leap forward to 3 a.m. and you will wake up wondering why you feel so tired. Could this be the final time Oregonians slog through a week of post-daylight savings fog? It seems like we've been talking about it for years, because we have. But after the 2019 passage of the Oregon State Bill 320, when the state spins forward into daylight savings time this spring, in less than 2 weeks' time, we're supposed to stay there. No fallback in the fall. No more changing of the clocks. Of course, that will happen only if Congress approves the change. But the move to allow states to permanently remain in daylight savings time has bipartisan support. The need for sleep being universal. And while the, and while the 2019 Sunshine Protection Act, which would make daylight savings time the new standard time, went nowhere, Hank Stern, a spokesman for Democratic Oregon Senator Ron Wyden, said Thursday that Wyden planned to co-sponsor the Sunshine Protection Act when it's reintroduced next week. Could this finally be it?
Hmm.
Only time will tell.
Pun intended.
But either way, get ready to say goodbye to one precious hour on Sunday, March 14th. Man.
Like, I almost panicked this yesterday, like the...
Yeah.
This, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was today.
I was thinking...
I was thrown off.
When is it? I was like, when is it? It's coming.
Right.
And then look like, okay, cool. Got another little week. I'm happy for it that I need the daylight.
Yes.
I am at that point, you know, as I've been talking to you offline about working an actual 9 to 5 hours from 9 o'clock to 5 o'clock.
Bruh.
I've never had to work past 2:30, maybe 3 as far as my main job.
Yeah.
And I don't like it. Getting done with working, it's
like
dark
it.
Time and leading into the darkness. It's not cool.
Mm-mm. Yeah, man. Yeah, man. Mm-mm. There's better ways to go about it. And maybe, you know, maybe they'll stick with it. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
What other state? Is it Arizona?
I feel like it is.
Yeah.
I feel like it is. I could be lying, but I feel like
I'm sure Arizona. A listener will correct us mentally. Well, CEO of One United Bank announces campaign to end the racial wealth gap. We like it.
We do.
Previous and current forms of systematic racism have crippled the black community's potential for growth, causing the average black family's net worth to be 10 times less than the average white family. As the nation's largest black-owned bank, One United Bank has decided to address this issue head-on with the One Transaction campaign. The campaign focuses on the 6 areas of financial transactions that can lead up to bona fide wealth. The 6 transactions include drawing up a living will, obtaining life insurance, running a profitable business, having savings, making investments, and improving your credit score. Accompanying the campaign will be a free virtual conference led by some of the nation's best financial educators. Tiffany the Budgetnista, Alish, ABC Shark Tank Damon John, founder of the Blackout Day 2020, Calvin Martyr, and many more.
Nice.
The conference will take place on Saturday, June 19th at 1 p.m. to commemorate Juneteenth. Hey. A day symbolizing black liberation in which black people were taught effective ways to gain their financial freedom. It's about taking those resources wherever you are and making smart, systematic decisions. The campaign is about giving you the information to make smart, systematic decisions over time that will increase your net worth. We aren't guessing about it. It will increase your net worth.
That's dope.
Me likey.
Me likey times two. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah, this is something I'm looking into this.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of the conference, actually trying to see about this conference on Juneteenth. That's the day before Father's Day.
Man.
I feel like I love this.
Yeah.
That's been the big thing, the information, right? And having a group that is a bank, the largest mm-hmm. black-owned bank on mm-hmm. top of that, mm-hmm. offering this information out. I love the momentum, and I'm not even hoping anymore. I'm just waiting for the rest to catch, because I know it is. So yeah. I'm going to stop saying I hope others catch on. They're going to, and it's beautiful to watch it happen.
Yeah, you're seeing it. I think we know. We've been seeing it, especially in our circles and just some of the conversations that we've been seeing happen on social media. It's mm-hmm. cool. Like, it's becoming the trend, right?
Yeah.
It's becoming the cool thing to do. Yeah. You know, I'm definitely loving that. We got to look into this. This is going to be an event not to miss.
Yeah.
And thank God it's going to be virtual. Everybody can stay in the safety of their own homes.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Maya Chaka makes NFL history. Maya Chaka is making NFL history after becoming the first black woman to be named game official by the league. According to NBC's Today Show, Chaka got the call about the position on Monday and literally couldn't believe it. She's quoted as saying, "Just because I've been at it for so long, and I just never thought the day would come. The moment didn't really hit me until just now," she continued. "Sometimes we don't take time to stop and smell our own roses." Chaka, who has been training with the NFL since 2014, said her job is an honor. She says the best referees have to be patient, be able to listen, and you'll need to have the confidence on the field to make the call. You're going to make some mistakes, and it's not necessarily how many mistakes you make, but it's how you recover, Chaka said. The Today Show reports that Maya Chaka is also a physical education and health teacher for at-risk youth in Virginia Beach. She has previously worked on the sidelines of the XFL and college football games. She hopes her new role can inspire her students. If you have a passion for something, or you have the drive for something, don't let it hold you back just because you think that something may give you some type of limitation, she said. Hard work and always, always, always follow your dreams. Chaka becomes the second ever female NFL referee. Sarah Thomas was hired in 2015 as the first full-time woman official. Last month, she became the first woman official to officiate a Super Bowl. Dope.
Man, I like it.
Shout out to Virginia Beach.
I like it.
Yeah.
The things that we know are way long overdue.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to go there.
And so to actually see it come to, you know, see these things happen and see these representations happen, mm-hmm. the faces that, you know, then give the hope for our next generations and the generations moving forward. Exactly. You find out that a lot of the barriers that were there based on the preconceived notions. And then these people come in and crush everything that was said. Mm. I mean, look at how long the black quarterback wasn't a thing. You know, you take
pieces like that. We're just not smart enough. We're just, you know, just not strategic enough to be able to follow everything that's going on. And ridiculous, man. Ridiculous.
You have to pull up, show out, prove them wrong,
man.
Again and again. So, I know you don't rock with the pork, but green eggs and ham. The green eggs and ham man himself.
Hey.
Is getting some books pulled off that shelf.
Well.
Six Dr. Seuss books will no longer be published over racist images. After racist and insensitive images were detected in six Dr. Seuss books, they'll no longer be published. The business that preserves and protects the author's legacy confirmed on Tuesday, March 2nd. The books that will no longer be published are If I Ran the Zoo. That just sounds
Yo, bro, nuts. I don't even want to see that drawing. Like, what do you mean? Oh, no.
And To Think I Saw It on Mulberry Street. Mm. McElligott's Pool. Mm-hmm. On Beyond Zebra. Scrambled Egg Super, and The Cat's Quizzer. The Associated Press reports, these books portray people in ways that are hurtful and wrong. Dr. Seuss Enterprises told AP in a statement, ceasing sales of these books is only part of the commitment and our broader plan to ensure Dr. Seuss Enterprises catalogs, represents, and supports all communities and families. Dr. Seuss, born Theodore Seuss Geisel, is best known for his classic books, The Cat in the Hat, How the Grinch Stole Christmas, and Green Eggs and Ham. Has sold over 650 million copies of his books worldwide. The Washington Post noted in 2015, the author has reportedly had a long history of publishing both anti-Semitic and racist imagery in his work. According to a study published in the journal Research on Diversity and Youth Literature, Dr. Seuss had once drawn black boxers as gorillas and used the Jewish stereotype in another body of work by portraying Jewish characters as financially conscious and cheap. 50 books by Dr. Seuss showed that 43 out of the 45 characters of color have characteristics aligning with the definition of Orientalism, the study shows.
Ooh. So I first heard about this by some right-wing talking heads pushing back, talking about now they're trying to cancel Dr. Seuss. Yep. And the way they rally up their base and just get them all riled up and just charge. Here's the thing. His family's organization, the people responsible, are saying, ooh, we caught something here in six of his books. We need to get these up out of here. Are you meaning to tell me that you'd rather have this type of racist literature out there? You know what I'm saying? Like, how can you push back against it? On some more, like, they're canceling Dr. Seuss.
Because they saw, the canceling. Mm-hmm. No, it was his side. It wasn't, it wasn't a big rally and a hashtag, you know, that led to them regretfully having to pull down these books from the shelf. So that's the first piece, right? Yeah. One of the things that we have to remember, we don't have to, but we should remember in these moments, is the way that people, first off, I know the big names in the Dr. Seuss world.
Right.
I've never, these titles that are getting pulled.
Yeah, these aren't the classics.
Not familiar. And yeah. I have a big feeling a lot of the people outraged.
Never read any
of these words. No. So it's just one of those things that it's easy to jump on and be like, hey, and they're getting everything. Everybody's so sensitive.
Right.
Because they've ran with this and it's okay because it's not affecting any of them.
Right.
And that's what it boils down to. People just like to be outraged and it must feel good. I don't know what it stimulates.
You're addicted to fake outrage when there are things that are happening out here that you should be outraged about. And that's what those are the things that you're telling us to just calm down, you know, relax, get over it. That was centuries ago. Why are you still hung up on that? Let's talk about Mr. Potato Head. Did you hear about that?
Man, I was late to that party. I'll say I caught the Potato Head thing on a late one.
They got to chill.
Are they still selling a ton of potato heads? I can't think of the last time I just seen a kid toting Mr. PH.
That's what's hot in the streets right now? Mr. Potato Head's hot in the streets?
Yeah, like I'm like, how many of those are being sold a year? I need to do some digging.
Yo, that's like complaining about, remember the vacuums with the little domes with the little pop-up jaws?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, what are we talking about?
Oh, one thing I want to highlight before we jump up out of here is I know last week we were talking about the new gun violence team put together.
Yeah.
So this was in the last 30 years. This was the high for shootings.
Okay.
So that was something that after some research, I did have a colleague reach out to me and give me the update. And yes.
I've been seeing a lot of, you know, stuff on social media, people throwing different events and, you know, trying to have some conversations around what's going on. So
yeah,
maybe we'll get some, you know, maybe we'll have some updates. Maybe we can have somebody on the show to discuss it.
I actually got a person that I think would be, and I'll talk to you off air about it.
Well, all right. Well, make sure you check in with us every Monday at 8 a.m., 2 p.m., 8 p.m. as we sit down and run up the numbers.
Run up the numbers.
Kentucky Attorney General Daniel Cameron needs to resign.
Hosted by Ken Jones and DJ Ambush.
Brett Hankinson needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Special thanks to our researcher and writer, Claudia Claudio.
Hey, Miles Cosgrove needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
Music by C's.
Jonathan Mattingly also needs to be charged with Breonna Taylor's death.
All of them. That's to go.